Welcome to the Information Security Forum podcast. I'm your host, Tavia Gilbert. Today's podcast features a discussion between ISF Managing Director Steve Durbin and Egon Zehnder consultant Will Houston. Will's work puts him in the position of advising and headhunting in the cybersecurity space. He and Steve met in the studio recently to talk about the skills shortage, the effect of a breach on a CISO's value and employability, and more.
So, Will, great to see you. Thanks very much for coming by.
Wonderful to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
That's all right. So, I'm really interested to hear a bit more about your background and your career trajectory up to the point where you moved into executive search. So, tell us a little bit about that, because it's a fascinating story.
I did ROTC in college and entered the Army as an intelligence officer.
Right.
And specifically, a signals intelligence officer. And the reason that's relevant is that a lot of the cybersecurity capabilities of the United States developed from that world. Right. Cyber Command was developed with the National Security Agency. A lot of the skill sets and people came from that world.
Right.
So I was on active duty for 4 years and then left, went to graduate school and worked in various private sector companies, the government, federal government, and stayed in the Army Reserves. Mm-hmm. For the years after that, up to this point, I'm still in the Army Reserves.
Oh, okay. You mentioned this point about starting out in signals and
yep.
that being really the foundation for cyber. That's a really interesting perspective. So tell me a bit more about that.
Well, and it's particularly interesting and from a talent perspective because I was a history major.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And so, but the Army didn't have any problem with assigning a history major to a technical field with the very deliberate intent that we'll train him up.
Right.
So I was dealing with signals intelligence right from the beginning.
Right.
And one thing that did for me is that it created a sense that I can tackle this. So mm-hmm. when I went to graduate school, I wanted to focus on technical digital strategy.
Right.
And went to work for a consulting firm that specialized in that when it was a new thing right out of graduate school. Even though, again, I wasn't the technologist, I was the business guy, but I worked very closely right beside software engineers from day one.
Right. And so what was the real sort of attraction for you then of cyber? I mean, a history major, very, very different. I get the, okay, maybe moving into the armed forces, that piece. Mm-hmm. But then cyber seems a bit of a leap.
It is. I think the way I would describe it is throughout my career as an Army reservist, so I moved to a bunch of different roles, but I spent 10 years in the Pentagon working in the National Military Command Center.
Right.
And the cyber threat only grew, and I was certainly exposed to it and became very interested in it. And the technical aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
Later in that career, I ended up going to work for Google.
Okay.
Out in Silicon Valley. And was approached by some former colleagues about setting up a reserve capability in Silicon Valley
mm-hmm.
To help Cyber Command reach out to the private sector, mm-hmm. companies that wouldn't necessarily have thought about working with Cyber Command or mm-hmm. the government in general. And that was my first deep dive into that world.
Right.
And again, I wasn't the technologist, but I was exposed to all the people that were working in that field. So when I joined Egon Zehnder, it was a natural fit. And cybersecurity had been very interesting to me throughout my career. Even when I was doing digital strategies for private sector companies as a consultant, you know, I saw these companies investing a tremendous amount in new technologies and new ways of interacting with customers.
Mm-hmm.
And I immediately saw that as they did that, they needed to invest in the security aspects of that, too, that they have to go hand in glove.
Right. I mean, it's really interesting that you talk about this sort of public-private partnership. I think one of the things that, you know, we talked about on other podcasts is this need for just that, because there aren't enough skills to go around. The level of understanding that is out there, you know, is far richer if we can combine both of those. So what sort of tips might you have for doing that properly or effectively?
One of the things that I frequently encourage people to consider and companies to look at, first off, the Department of Homeland Security has information sharing entities for private sector public partnership.
Right.
And participating in those is invaluable.
Okay.
But even the military will conduct virtual war games
mm-hmm.
where they bring private sector companies in, cyber war games. I participated in one at the Naval Postgraduate School in Rhode Island just
right.
a couple of years ago, and it was absolutely fascinating learning experience for everybody. They brought senior executives, and not just CISOs,
mm-hmm.
Senior executives who would be involved in a cyber incident into an environment with government players, military players, the whole gamut. And that's a level of engagement that I think is exemplary for the private sector and that public-private partnership.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that certainly as we see very many more nation-state-based attacks on private sector, you know, and that's something that we're probably going to have to get more used to, I suppose, is how do we work much more collaboratively to combat that particular threat. So if I'm the CEO of a private company listening to this, how do I get involved?
One thing is to ask your CISO or your executives in general, do they know who to call?
Right.
Ideally, they're not looking that number up on the internet the day after a breach happens.
Right.
In the best of all possible worlds, they know exactly who to call. They've talked to them before anything has happened.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI is very engaged in this.
Right.
And most people know that, but some don't.
Mm-hmm.
That the FBI has really advanced cyber skills and talent, and they will come and gladly talk to a company well before anything happens. That's their preferred MO.
Right. Okay. So plenty of ways to get involved, and if all else fails, then you can just look the number up on the internet.
That's true. Guess,
right?
Indeed.
So the beauty of technology, right? So great. So we've talked about that sort of whole public-private piece, how you got into the space. It's changed pretty rapidly. I mean, give me your perspective on that volume of change as it's happened, but also perhaps how you see it continuing.
It certainly has changed dramatically, and it continues to. You know, one of the things that we frequently point to is the importance of the CISO, the cybersecurity professional's ability to communicate in business terms.
Right.
I think most people have understood that, but it's still a challenge when you have a lot of very high-quality cybersecurity professionals moving up the ranks without necessarily exposure to the language of business and the ability to brief a board.
Mm-hmm.
But the message has gotten out there, and you see cybersecurity professionals preparing for it, working towards it, which is very good. One of the things that we're seeing quite a bit is a request for product security, not just battening down the hatches of the systems, but actually playing a part in the early stages of product development.
Right.
So that it's not an afterthought.
Okay. After the so products. Security by design then.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And those skills are even less prevalent.
Right.
You know, it's so the pool that was small to begin with is even smaller when you start going down those areas of development. Another one that we point to is the importance of the cultural aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real leadership challenge.
Yeah.
Having a cybersecurity professional who can lead not just his team, but lead the company and inculcate a culture of security throughout the organization, and also recognize that in the past, cybersecurity was frequently seen as an inhibitor to business as opposed to an enabler. And having those people that can actually make it known throughout the company that, hey, when the cybersecurity team is coming, they're there to help. Yes, they've got to make sure things are secure, but it shouldn't be something that you immediately are nervous about or resist.
Mm-hmm. That we're getting to some of the sort of the culture of the company in that, though, right?
Absolutely.
Because, you know, one of the challenges that I see regularly is security still being held in this silo.
Yep.
You know, it's something that you do to me that I really don't want to touch if I can avoid it. And, you know, I view that as being a bit of an inhibitor to change and certainly in terms of protecting the overall enterprise. What's your take on that?
I think that's absolutely right. I love the phrase, it's something that you do to me. And I had a very interesting contrast when I was working at Google and then in the military at the same time.
Right.
And I saw two starkly different approaches.
Uh-huh.
And I don't want to minimize the challenges that the military faces. They have to really lock things down. You know, lives are at stake.
Yeah.
But it frequently felt like it could sometimes be an inhibitor, a series of checks and blocks that were keeping me from getting my job done. On the flip side, Google was the exact opposite.
Right.
When that security team was rolling things out, they frequently were, and almost every single time, you could see that they had thought about the user from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
That I knew it was a new security measure. It might be something that I have to do, but I could tell that they had taken the time to think, how can I make this easy for the person to implement so that it's not getting in the way of them doing their job?
Right.
It was very impressive, and my hat's off to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly I think that's something that a lot of companies, you know, aspire to do today. But in my experience, it's something that is really challenging. any sort of advice that you can give to a company as to how they might go about doing that? I mean, you know, we talked about the silo. I mean, my view is we need to try to get rid of that by putting people out into the business. But just based on some of the things you've been saying there, it seems that there's a couple of steps that you could highlight for people.
Absolutely. I think, you know, one of the things that we at Aegon Zender particularly pride ourselves on is the ability to make a positive impact
right.
on companies in the world through leadership. And that starts at the top.
Right.
You know, so it shouldn't be the CISO's job to do this. It should be the CEO.
Mm-hmm.
It should be the board. And there are a lot of ways that that can be done, but primarily through example. And if the CEO is talking about it in a positive way, mm-hmm. not a do it to me way, you know, I think that sets the tone and is probably the start.
Right. So let's move on to talk a little bit about skill shortage. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned, you know, the fact that the CISO is having to learn a variety of different skills. No shortage of statistics out there that talk about skill shortage, how difficult it is to find the right people. What's your experience in that space? I mean, obviously, this is something that you do on a daily basis, right?
Right. And there's no question that the demand far outstrips the supply and it's not getting any better.
Right.
And even as they bring more people online, as you know, you are seeing more people trained up, more training opportunities, the demand just continues to grow. So one of the most obvious things that you have to do is recognize that you probably are going to have to pay for this.
Mm-hmm.
It's basic economics 101.
Yeah.
You know, when the demand outstrips the supply, the price goes up.
Right.
But also one thing that we frequently tell clients first to do, if they're coming to us asking us for a level of expertise in the CISO function that is going to be very expensive, is, you know, do you really need that?
Mm-hmm.
And have you considered outsourcing it? Because there right. are good outsourcing options out there.
Mm-hmm.
And frequently they haven't thought that through mm-hmm. Fully. So there's that outsourcing, mm-hmm. Other than just paying for top talent, which
yeah, yeah.
we're glad to help people find good people like that. The other thing that we point to is training their own people.
Okay.
And there's frequently, I run into an almost dismissive discount of the people on board.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be warranted, but at the same time, have they gone through a full inventory of their people? And not just the people that are on the cybersecurity team.
Right.
You know, have they looked at the IT department and done what we call, you know, turn a blue to a red?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody that's very good in IT might not have thought about moving into cybersecurity, but training them to see mm-hmm. if they want to and chart a course for them to do so as well. Finally, the thing that I point to is the military model.
Right.
And people frequently point to the military or the government and the challenges that they have retaining or attracting top cybersecurity talent. And it's absolutely the case. But generally, they're talking about very advanced senior people.
Mm-hmm.
But what people don't talk about is the young people that the Army takes right out of high school,
mm-hmm.
high potential people. They know they don't have the skills that they are going to need, but they're going to train them. Much like they trained me, history major, to be a signals intelligence guy.
Right.
And I would love to see the private sector take a look at transitioning military members,
mm-hmm.
as well as take a look at that model. Could we take kids from high school, high potential people, that for whatever reasons, maybe they did 2 years of community college, but mm-hmm. have an interest, and could we train them and then grow the workforce from within? I don't think they've looked at it.
No, I would agree with you. And I think that certainly, if you look at these sorts of people, you know, they are digital natives, right? They've grown up with
Absolutely.
Technology. So we're not starting from nothing.
That's
you know,
right.
We're ahead of the game already.
Mm-hmm.
And it is about, I think, organizations being, in my experience anyway, perhaps willing to invest for the long term, but also being really clear about the fact that sometimes it is easier to grow your own.
Absolutely.
Than it is to go outside. And
a lot
try
more
to,
reasonably priced.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose the fear around that, of course, is that what you don't want to do is to be growing all this talent for somebody else to come in and steal
that's,
from you.
That's exactly right. You've got to have a real comprehensive strategy. Train
yeah.
them up and show them why they want to stay. But on the other hand, there's the flip side, too, is that if you're not training your people, somebody's going to grab them if they see an opportunity somewhere else.
Yeah. It's a much bigger issue, isn't it? It isn't just the skill piece. It's about that whole, you know, employee value proposition that companies need to be putting together. I think in an environment where people don't sort of join an organization for life anymore, it is a a contracted period, which could be 2 years, it could be 3 years, it could be very much less, it could be very much more. But it's all down to the individual, isn't it? So any advice you've got for people on, you know, building out those sorts of career progression value propositions and really, I suppose, understanding and being able to relate to the way that the market is expecting careers today?
I would say, and this applies, you know, across any organization, but making sure that people understand the path to development, what the opportunities are, you know, where they can go if they stay, articulating that the company values them. I think that's one of the other things that, you know, works both ways. You want the cybersecurity professionals to give the sense to the rest of the company that they're there to help, not to do something to them.
Mm-hmm.
But you also want the cybersecurity professionals to feel like they're part of the company, not just an outside policeman.
Right.
And that generates a sense of value. And, you know, I think people would want to stay. But it is one thing that is truly remarkable in the executive search space. When you look at a cybersecurity person's career, frequently they're in any other industry, they would be absolutely radioactive in terms of looking like they were way too jumpy. But you do see it quite a bit in the cybersecurity realm.
One thing I do want to ask you is the perspective that hiring organizations, or indeed you and other firms like yours, have on a CISO or a senior security professional who's been through a breach and got let go.
Mm-hmm.
Good thing, bad thing?
It's really remarkable. I'd say not long ago, it was generally seen as a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're actually having clients say, we want somebody who's been through a breach.
Right.
And it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, of course.
And I think the most important thing, though, is not just that they've been through the breach. How did they handle it? What did they learn? Being able, you know, that's what I'll ask people when I'm first meeting them, because being able to tell that story makes a tremendous difference. And it's very compelling to a client, particularly clients that are frequently under attack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want somebody who can tell the story. Oh, no, I've seen this before. I know what to do. So I think it's very important. It's not to minimize the fact that, you know, this is an interesting, I don't know if I would go so far as to say unique, but definitely different in the sense that your head's on the chopping block in a way that other positions might not be. But I would say that's even becoming less so. People realize that if there's going to be a breach, it doesn't necessarily mean that the CISO and the cybersecurity team weren't doing their job.
Mm-hmm.
It might, but it doesn't necessarily mean that. And so I think there's definitely a lot more tolerance. And I've frankly been pleased when clients say, no, I want somebody who's seen it. I want to hear how they handle it, what they learn from it, what they do different, if anything.
I mean, it's valuable experience, isn't it? That, you know, fortunately today, the majority of organizations haven't been through that. But I think there is this sword hanging over people that says, you know, come the day, we could be the victim of a breach too. And you really do want somebody running that department, I would suggest anyway, who has been there, who's done more than just work off the tabletops.
Right.
Which again is not saying that's not valuable either.
That's exactly right. I was going to say, don't downplay the value of the tabletops in the meantime. But I would also say you refer to the companies that have never been breached. I've heard friends and colleagues who refer to it as there are those who've been breached and there are those who don't know they've been breached.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there are a very small group of folks who've never been breached.
No, that's right. That's right. You mentioned there that just on this sort of breach topic, that sometimes it isn't just down to the CISO and the security department. The board obviously has a key role to play in setting the tone in terms of establishing the risk appetite for an organization, determining spend in some instances as well that will be allocated to it, and really, you know, positioning the organization in terms of how much is a reasonable amount of focus to put on cyber. So for board members, you know, that might be listening to this podcast, what advice do you have for them?
First and foremost, don't shy away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you don't necessarily know the technical details, ask the people to speak in business terms and risk terms.
Right.
And this is the on the other flip side, this is how we coach CISOs.
Mm-hmm.
When they're talking to a board, you need to learn how to speak in terms that they'll understand. Not dumb it down, but make sure that you're at least putting it in terms of risk and also opportunity. You know, they'll understand that. The other thing that I think is maybe not as appreciated is the importance of an audit function.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about the spend.
Yeah.
A good cybersecurity professional is not going to ask for the moon. Mm-hmm. And the best know, you know, what the nature of the business is and what sort of spend they've got to play with and mm-hmm. work with, but it's important to audit that. And that's a big challenge, because you've got to have auditors who understand cyber. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that they can actually look at this spend and make sure that it makes sense. Well, the board can help ensure that, can help ask those questions, probing questions. Do we have that? You know, what are we seeing? Is this spend effective?
Mm-hmm. So really, I think what we've been saying is that when we look at cybersecurity, when we look at some of the challenges that are there, there's plenty of opportunity for people who want to get involved in the industry. We're by no means at a point where we've got all the answers. And so I suppose it would appeal to individuals who do have some of that entrepreneurial streak in them, who really want to make something of a difference.
Absolutely. And I'm not speaking for the United States Army. I'm here as a private individual, but I would put a plug in. Anybody that is interested in that, consider going into the military. You'll get great training. if you want to make it a career, they'll have a job for you for the long term. But if not, it's a great place to get training. But absolutely. People that want, and there are more and more educational opportunities. Universities are rolling out great first-class programs to train people up in these skills because there's such demand.
It's fantastic. Well, thanks very much indeed for coming in. It's been really interesting talking to you. Certainly learned a lot. So thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Steve. It's been a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you.
That concludes today's episode. Our thanks to Egon Zender's Will Houston, and as always, to ISF Managing Director Steve Durbin. We'll be back soon with another in-depth interview. In the meantime, listeners, if you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate and review it, and share it in your networks. Be sure to visit securityforum.org to join the conversation on our LinkedIn group, to access the show notes, and to download ISF's research, practical tools, and guidance relating to this discussion. We'll be back soon. Thanks for listening.